Okay, you're listening to CKUT. This is the Friday Morning After. I'm Joe Broadhurst. I am pleased to be joined on the phone with Susan Holtz, and she is the Senior Policy Analyst, or a Senior Policy Analyst, at the Canadian Institute for Environmental Law and Policy. Good morning.
Good morning.
I thank you for joining me. We did a small interview yesterday, and it didn't work very well technically, so I asked Susan to join me again this morning so we could have a clear version of this, because I actually believe this is a very important issue which more people need to be paying attention to. You were just listening to Jabba Ware, the Me, We, and Them Orchestra. That's off the album Vignettes in the Spirit of Ellington, and that song was Give Me a Moment. Okay. Thank you for joining me again. Susan Holtz, she is a senior policy analyst at the Canadian Institute for Environmental Law and Policy. She is also the author of a new report. It's called There Is No Away: Pharmaceuticals, Personal Care Products, and Endocrine Disrupting Substances, Emerging Contaminants Detected in Water. Good morning. And you can find that report on CILAP.org. It's CIELAP.org. So can you just give us a small overview of what this report tackles as far as contaminants in the water?
Well, it depends on where you want to start talking about this issue, whether you're talking about the effects that people are concerned about, the endocrine disruptors, or what started the issue. I guess an overview of it would be that there's a very wide range of substances which it's now possible with modern testing methods to detect in water. These substances range from the remnants of pharmaceutical products, drugs that are either put into the water deliberately, flushed down the drain if you haven't filled a prescription, for instance, or used it all up, or excreted, since, after all, most of the, or at least half of the active ingredients in most drugs that we take are excreted from the body. They aren't used in the body and thus end up eventually in the wastewater system. A whole range of these substances, which are not all of one kind. As I said, they include drugs, they include industrial chemicals, they include pesticides, are now detectable in the water. And once we started looking in the late 1990s, it's beginning to be clear that in very small quantities, these are turning up everywhere. So this report takes a look at some of what's causing the problem, for example, the huge increase in the use of pharmaceutical products. It also looks at what some of the effects of these are. And one of the major effects of concern is that many of these substances are turning out to disrupt the endocrine system, the reproductive system. In wildlife, they're causing such things as feminization in fish, reproductive failure, and so forth. And then the report also looks at what we ought to be doing about it.
And let's talk a moment about the rise in legal drug use. There, in your report, you stated that a study was done between July 2001 and August of 2002, and just an amazing amount of prescriptions that are being filled and a rise in prescriptions. Can you talk about that for a second?
Yes. That particular study was done in Canada, and basically we are using right now more than 350 million individual human prescription drugs per year in Canada, 350 million individual prescriptions per year, which is just a huge number. In fact, you might even want to challenge that. It sounds like maybe somebody made a mistake on a decimal point, but in fact, that is the number. And when you think about it, in the U.S., where there is, in fact, even more drug use, legal drug use, one person, at least half the population, is now taking at least one prescription drug.
Half the population.
Yeah, and one person in six takes three or more. And when you're talking about people who are over 65, five out of six people take at least one drug.
And people, obviously, a certain proportion of those people aren't going to finish their prescription, or they're going, you know, we all go to people's houses and we go into the bathrooms and maybe we're searching for something and we open up the bathroom, you know, the mirror thing, and we see all these prescriptions up there, you know, we all have them. And those prescriptions end up going into wastewater and into the garbage. Is that correct?
They can, yes. If they are flushed down the toilet, which many people unthinkingly would do, they'll go directly into wastewater. If they're simply thrown out with the trash, they'll end up in a landfill. And if that landfill is not a secure landfill, or if it has an effluent plume that seeps out of the landfill, that too will end up in water somewhere.
And it's not, it can even go farther than that, because it doesn't have to be the actual drugs directly going into the garbage or into the wastewater. We excrete a certain amount of those drugs that our body actually doesn't use. Is that correct?
That's right. Every time you take a drug, the range is somewhere between 20 to 80% of the active ingredients in that drug aren't used up in the body. They're excreted out when you pee, and this is true for people, but it's also true for other animals. And there's also been an extraordinary rise in drugs that are given to domestic animals, dogs and cats, in veterinary clinics, of course, but more significantly, livestock that's raised for human consumption. Back in the 1950s or so, it was discovered more or less accidentally that very, very low doses of antibiotics fed to animals increased their rates of growth. People at the time did not know why this worked. In fact, I'm not certain that it's absolutely clear even now why this works, but it does increase the rate of growth. And as a result, in the U.S., for example, some 25 million pounds of antibiotics are given to animals, not for therapeutic uses, but for promoting growth and for prevention of disease in crowded conditions. And that's about eight times the amount that people use.
So there's plenty of ways that we're consuming these things, even though we may not even be aware that we are.
That's correct.
And there is the fact that these drugs are going into the environment, going into the water, going into the landfills. These drugs can possibly adhere to other drugs or other biological agents in these systems and change. Is that correct?
Yes. The fate of any individual pharmaceutical product, or for that matter, any of the other contaminants we're talking about, is, of course, not the only contaminant in the water, whether we're talking about surface water or groundwater. There are very likely many more, and what the interactions amongst them are is certainly not clear.
And now, in your report, tests were done around in 2002 around sewage treatment plants in 14 cities in Canada, and what did they find during those tests?
Well, let's backtrack here a little bit. Canada has some catching up to do to be as far along in monitoring what's in our water as, for example, the United States. The United States has one of the largest systematic monitoring systems, in that the U.S. Geological Survey, since the very late 1990s, has been monitoring rivers, streams, and groundwater all over the U.S. for the presence of these kinds of drugs, and indeed finding them practically everywhere they looked, though in very, very small quantities, of course. But partly because of this work beginning to be published, there has been interest in this in Canada, and this particular report looked at water near something like 14, I believe it was, sewage treatment facilities, and indeed found a number of different pharmaceutical products, again, at low levels in this water. And we haven't really started looking very hard yet at other products besides pharmaceuticals, but products that are of some concern, as, for instance, endocrine disruptors. So this was just pharmaceutical products alone, drug residues.
Can you speak to our listeners just a little bit about these endocrine disrupting substances? The endocrine system controls hormones in the body, and it's a very vital system that we all need to control our systems. Can you just tell our listeners a little bit about how these substances can affect the endocrine system?
Sure. The endocrine system is what controls and regulates development and functioning, reproduction, for example, through hormones, which are the chemical messengers in the body that in tiny, tiny quantities in our bodies activate or deactivate various systems and functions. They include hormones like estrogen or androgen, the sex hormones, for example. And endocrine-disrupting substances can block the action of natural hormones in the body, or they can mimic the action of natural hormones, so that there are, for example, many substances which mimic the action of estrogen, the female sex hormone, in the body. They bind to the receptors that pick up the natural hormone and act like that hormone. Now, this is of considerable concern because estrogen specifically is linked to a number of cancers. And so although there is no definitive proof that this is actually happening in humans, there is certainly speculation that endocrine-disrupting substances and specifically estrogen-mimicking substances may be a factor in a number of reproductive cancers.
One of the products that you've mentioned in your report is DEET, and this is a pesticide, is that correct?
No, it's, well, I suppose technically it falls in that category, but it's an insect repellent. It's widely used as, in fact, one of the most effective insect repellents as either an ingredient or in some formulations it's practically the whole insect repellent. And I'm surprised myself that it turns up so widely, but it is apparently extremely persistent in water, unlike some of these other substances which may break down for one reason or another in the presence of light, for example, or other chemicals in the water or the water itself. A handful of these substances seem to be extremely persistent, and indeed DEET is one of those.
And it's been proven that DEET has caused reproductive impairment in fish and birds? Is that a proven fact?
No, it's not proven that any. It's very difficult to link a particular chemical to a particular particular effect. For example, one of the first things that set alarm bells ringing, you might say, was discovering in the UK in the 1990s that fish just in the immediate vicinity of sewage treatment plant outfalls were all of one sex. They were feminized. There weren't any male fish there. The presence of something in the wastewater treatment plume, and we're talking here after it's been treated. This is a clean effluent, so to speak. Nonetheless, some combination or some particular substance in that treated water was causing fish to be feminized. And similarly, there have been instances when actual experiments have been done with animals that have been able to tie some particular substance to some particular effect, for instance, an anti-fouling compound that's used to be on the hulls of ships to keep barnacles and other things off them, has been shown in experiments to affect snails. That's the kind of very limited scientific evidence that's slowly accumulating that relates a particular substance to a particular effect. What we know now, though, is that there are these classes of substances that we could call endocrine disruptors as one type that have an effect on the endocrine system.
And this could these drugs being in the environment and our absorption of them, or this can have an effect on antibiotic drug resistance. Is that correct?
Well, another result of the huge increase in pharmaceutical use generally in the last half century or so has been and what's gone along with this in the case of antibiotic drugs is the development in the pathogens that they're designed to suppress. Resistance has developed, but the resistance actually develops where there are where there's a great deal of use, for example, in hospitals or perhaps amongst animals in a feedlot situation, where the microbes actually can pass around a resistance gene, so that it develops as a strain of that particular microbe and the disease that it represents or that it causes. It's the microbes themselves, the bacteria, that get into the water that contain these resistance genes rather than the drugs themselves. But what's not clear is the role that sewage treatment facilities have in being perhaps a reservoir or through some other mechanism that help maintain these kinds of drug-resistant bacteria.
We, as people in the community, we can call our representatives and we can try to make change as far as requesting for more research. But you have stated several recommendations in this report that you feel can help move this problem along, and we can try and figure out more stuff about it. Can you just discuss a little bit some of those recommendations? We all have choices. We all have a little bit of responsibility, and it's not just these drugs. This has to do with personal care products, our shampoos and things that we use every day. Can you just discuss a little bit about what we can do as a people?
Sure. In general, we make 11 recommendations, and the most important task is certainly to define better the scale and the significance of the problems scientifically. But apart from better scientific information about what's actually happening and what's out there in the environment, there are things that individuals can do. For example, one of the simplest is certainly never to discard unused drugs into either the trash or wastewater. They should be given to either back to pharmacies, although I must say there's no guarantee that pharmacies won't themselves simply put them in the trash, or else brought to a household hazardous waste day, which many municipalities have, in which you can dispose of products in the household that really shouldn't be just thrown out, for example, electronic equipment or paint. As I said, many municipalities have these, and that's the place for unused drugs. Similarly, you can take a close look at what is in the things that end up in wastewater, like shampoo, household cleaning products, the general cleaning products, and see if you can find any that avoid some of the known contaminants of concern. Now, this is not easy to do because there isn't an easy labeling program, and I myself have looked at many products, including products that are sold as natural products in health food stores and the like, and there are very few indeed that avoid all use of these substances. The things I would be particularly concerned about are phthalates and parabens, for example. But there are a handful of products that made by companies that are quite conscientiously trying to avoid the use of these. They include a Canadian company, Druid, right in Montreal or outside Montreal, who make shampoos and other personal care products. Aubrey Organics, which I believe is based in Florida, certainly in the U.S., is a quite old company that for a long time has been a leader in avoiding these products. So you can certainly take that kind of personal responsibility.
Okay. Well, I've been speaking with Susan Holson. She is the senior she is a senior policy analyst at the Canadian Institute for Environmental Law and Policy. Her new report is called There Is No Away, Pharmaceuticals, Personal Care Products, and Endocrine Disrupting Substances, Emerging Contaminants Detected in Water. I do thank you for joining me this morning, and I hope that some of our listeners will take some time the next time that they are going to buy some shampoo and perhaps look at the back of the bottle instead of just picking up whatever's the closest thing on the shelf. Thank you very much for joining me.
You're welcome.
Have a good morning.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.